SEN Central. Tuesday Hacks with the Australians Courtney Walsh and Fox Sports Tim Hodges.
Welcome back to RSN Central. We are live from the Minnie Valley Racecourse. We have been a part of Breakfast with the Stars. We've had the Barry draw for the great race. Mystic Journey, Barry number 6. Liz Crusoe's drawn a little bit wide. Castle Vecchio's drawn basically barrier 3 after gaining a start. The only 3-year-old in the contest on Saturday. And Tiako Shark, unfortunately, has drawn the car park, but it's also gained a start. Humidor was the big story after the fields were announced. He's the first emergency. He misses out. And Mr. Quickie is also an emergency in the Wait for Age Championship of Australasia. Courtney Walsh has been here all morning. Timmy Hodges has just rocked up from wherever he's been, and they both join me now. Timmy, good morning to you.
G'day, Gareth. G'day, Walshy. I'll let you explain what Walshy's wearing.
We are in the middle of the parade ring, basically, here at Moonee Valley, and the sun has come out. There's no protection, and we all know that Courtney has no hair. So he has donned, I don't know what you've... What are you trying to do? Explain that to our listeners.
Being very sun smart. Wearing a protective
hanky.
Yep.
I'd say more like a dishcloth. I've got a little spot on the nose. You need to keep that in shape, and with no hair, you don't need to be fried too early in the spring. You know it's going to happen at some stage.
And poor old Wayne Hawks has got similar skin to poor old Courtney Walsh, and this is probably not the ideal
setting. Can you reserve this spot for Saturday?
I'll see what we can do. Hey, Walshy, what was the story for you this morning at the Barry draw?
Look, I thought I was fascinated by, the emergency situation, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Not just the, who would make the field, but also how the barrier draw unfolded and the ability of the emergencies to go and select a barrier as opposed to, say, replacing a runner as they were coming in. I thought that could have some impact on what occurs on Saturday. So you see Harlem go from barrier 2 to barrier 1. The horses will all come in a bit.
Correct.
but it's interesting that those top barriers went missing.
Yep.
I suppose to the emergency. So I thought that was interesting. I still think the favourite will be very hard to beat based on that international form and the informed jockey of the nation in Damien Lane.
We talk about entertainment and building up suspense basically in sport. Bathurst did it so brilliantly there last week. They probably didn't do it deliberately, but as you watch the concluding stages, do they have enough petrol? Will they survive for the rest of the race? Will they make it to the finish? And I think Moonee Valley do it so well here, Timmy, because the suspense and the talk before the race, no one knows who's in the field. So people still arrive here thinking that they're in the field. I was with the Mr. Quickie team, and they were devastated. And you can understand their hurt, because they thought they would have been a big chance if they got into the
Should they have been?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Like, he was unlucky in the Caulfield Cup. He was brilliant first up, and he put in a shocker second up. I've got no doubt he would have been competitive if he did make the field. And they're thinking, well, I've won a Group 1. I've been there, done that, and Tiako Shark is yet to do that. Why is he in and I'm not?
What about Humidor? I mean, I'm...
Yeah.
I enjoy horse racing, but I'm not in the game like yourself and even Walshy. That how can a horse that has finished second and third the last 2 years not automatically get a start? Like, it seems seems odd to take a draw card out.
Yeah, because the committee would have said that they don't think he could win, obviously, the Cox Plate this year, and he hasn't been in the form that saw him finish second in that Cox Plate. But as Kiramar pointed out, he's building towards a peak performance in the Cox Plate. And if he gains a start, he'll be competitive. But they decided to go with the 3-year-old, like a wild card in this race, to add something a little bit different to this race. And then Tiako Shark, who's New Zealand's best horse. So it's a tough one.
Do you like
it?
The fact that the committee here at Moonee Valley has that much power?
I like
it does seem too much power.
It's a point of difference for mine. And it's their race. And I think they should be able to choose whoever they want in this race. And do you know what? They're not going to get it right all of the time. And they might have... They had egg on their face a little bit last year because they left out Trap for Fools and it went on to win a McKinnon. So it's a difficult one.
But what's the fallout? You were with the connections, you said, this morning when they didn't get a start.
Heartbroken.
But heartbroken, angry. Are they angry?
No, well, Glenn Boss, I was there with Glenn Boss on the table, and he says it is what it is. Now, Glenn Boss knocked back rides in a $1 million race over there in Sydney to take the punt and say, I want to ride Mr. Quickie because I think it can win a Cox Plate, and I'll take the risk of this horse getting a start. Now, he didn't get a start, so Bossy then all of a sudden gives up a $1 million ride over there in Sydney, and he puts his hands up and we had a crack. And you feel for the connections because they, if it did get in, you could argue why that horse got in. And then you could say, well, Tiarco's Shark was stiff. But that's why I think that's so the theatre's so great for the Cox Plate, Courtney.
It's certainly, you know, the committee's had a very, very tough decision to make on five horses, nine, well, effectively probably four, but 19 down to 14. Now it's going to be a tough week for some of the connections of those actually in the field. You've got Craig Williams, who has to ride at 49.5. He last got down to 50, he said, 2 years ago.
Yep.
So already a very light man, but, you know, he's on a diet of fruit and salad and fresh air for the rest of the week. You've got the connections of Mr. Quickie. Do they run in the Moonee Valley Cup now with a view to the Melbourne Cup? And what does that do to the preparation? How do these things plan out for that? You've got the favourite, Damien Lane, drawn out in Barrier 15, which will come into 11, I think, with the scratchings if the emergencies don't get a start. Still got to try and plot a path around the valley from there. It's you know, and Barrier, say, for Harlem, who, you know, admittedly are the second probably stringer of the Hayes Dammitt team. But, you know, from Barrier 2 into Barrier 1, do you really roll forward aggressively now, or, you know, how does it work for them? So there's some fascinating tactical decisions to be made.
The best part about, and I don't want to be taken out of context here, but racing needs characters, and we need people to play up the game. And you've Frankie the Tories that's so great over there in the UK. And I was thinking, who's going to be the person that's going to be the character today? Because as you would know, Timmy, when you cover sport, we all love characters because that gets everybody talking. And I think Glenn Boss is a great character. He plays it up to the camera. He loves it. Huey Bowman's so great when he wins. I love the passion of James McDonald. And Craig Williams, Oliver, they're so great to give up their time as well when we turn up to events like this. But, Timmy, you would love this. The Japanese trainer who trains the favourite Lise Crasseur, Mr. Yagi, turned up with a Crocodile Dundee hat on and all of the press outside of racing when he sat and faced the media today. They didn't ask a question about the horse. They wanted to know, where did you get that hat from?
And is Crocodile Dundee your favourite movie?
Yeah.
And even better, I mean, I've got to say, I wish I'd bumped into him out here. It might have been better than the blue dishcloth. But...
yeah. Should have hurried. If only you knew.
He said he's certain of two things. Well, effectively certain of two things on Saturday. He has the best jockey. He's convinced that Damien Lane's the best jockey after that success he had had on the mare in Japan in June. And he'll certainly have the best hat because what he wore today, he said, is the number two option. He's got another one to pull out on Saturday.
I love it. Can we ask Gareth, where does Cox Plate Day rate for you in your favourite days where you wake up, you put the suit on, you head off to the racetrack? Is Cox Plate in position one or two, or where does it sit?
Well, it's a tough one because I think all of the great race days I love to attend. Like, I was at the Caulfield Cup Day, Guineas Day is one of my favourite days, the Melbourne Cup Week. I really enjoy Derby Day. Melbourne Cup's okay to me, but it's only the one race. And then I really enjoy Stakes Day on the final day. But there's something special about the Cox Plate because we've had the champions that have raced this turf and won with Winx, Kingston Town, my all-time favourite horse, in Saintly. Northerly, not far behind Tim, winning two Cox Plates, defeating Sunline in Magical Jewels. Wonderful contests. Horses like Might and Power, as I just pointed out, we've had some of the very, very best. And then when you look back at the replays, like Bill Collins' call with Dulcify, going to win by a minute and he might just win the Melbourne Cup by that far. And Bill Collins' broadcast with Kingston Town, once again, he can't win. These races, how can you forget 1983? Is it 83, 86? Yeah, Bone Crusher and Our Waverley Stars. These are the races that are etched in Australian sporting fans' memories, these great races at the Coliseum.
Where did you have it? Silver, bronze?
Probably... well, it's a tough one. Probably, it's nearly my favourite race because the champions win it. This is the, and as they say, Courtney, isn't it? It is the heavyweight championship of Australasian racing, now world racing in a way.
And just as an event, Walshy, I reckon that first time I ever came to a Cox Plate, it's an amphitheatre where you're closer here to horses than anywhere else, any other racetrack on earth almost, and they go so fast.
They do.
That's what struck me, that just the speed and then the banking or the camber, as Walshy was telling me about, that it's like a damn NASCAR race. They're coming around that corner and they straighten up and it's like, holy hell, they're flying here.
And the thunder of the hooves as they're going past, you know, and down past the school, past the tabouret there on the corner, the crowd, you just hear the roar. It's an exceptional venue. When I was an old trotting lover, I used to love the big Hunter Cup and Victoria Cups that were here, where you could really, you know, you were so close to the action, and you're even closer with the thoroughbreds. The grandstand, I think, is superb. You still get the great view back into the city as well. It's a beautiful race course.
It is so sad that harness racing left this place, because it gave it real relevance because of the backdrop and the home of the Cox Plate and some of the great standard breeds. Moonee Valley, and everybody loved turning up here on a Saturday night for a big race. And Melton will take its own place in history down the track, but it's still, when you turn up to events like this, I think you still miss Moonee Valley.
What do you think about the changes that are coming here?
Well, it's hard to really give an opinion until you actually see it. And looking at the plans, it'll be something else, really. You'll be able to book in a hotel room and watch the races live. So I think it's something that the Moonee Valley Racing Club have had in their thinking for a long, long time now. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they actually do it. But proof will be in the pudding once we see it.
But changing the layout, the reconfiguration of the track, Walshy, where do you sit on that?
Well, I suppose if we're looking back into the city when they're coming past the winning post, that's not a bad view necessarily of the pictures will be broadcast around the world. I love the track though. I love it as it is. It is a point of difference. It's, you know, Caulfield's different to Flemington. This is different again to those two. It's you know, there's something about it on a Friday night as well. Like I can't wait for this. You know, the Manicato. It'll be fascinating to see what happens with Bivouac drawn Barrier One, whether, you know, how that race unfolds, because we've seen some crazy things happen in Manicados as well. So, look, it'll be fascinating. The other factor for this weekend, we go from 33 degrees on Thursday to 14 on Saturday. Now, that's normally, that can happen in the day in Melbourne, but, you know, it's going to be... Another, I suppose, twist, and what that does, for the track is to, I mean, it normally handles the weather pretty well here, but it'll be interesting.
What do you think? They've been blessed for so long with Winx the last 4 years. Yep. What sort of crowd do they? Is it a full house or?
We asked
Daryl Braithwaite.
No. So no horses, no Winx. And we asked Alistair Dwyer there, the marketing and communication manager at Moonee Valley, just before, and the challenges his department faced, because it was so easy really to market and get people to turn up to their Cox Plate. Because of Winx, but because the Cox Plate's such a great race and there's so many different angles and stories to this contest on Saturday afternoon, people come to the Valley. And because it's the race, it's at the Coliseum, and it's a great place to watch racing. No Daryl Braithwaite, I think he's headed off to Tamworth, would you believe? He got double booked.
Who is his replacement?
That's a good question.
We discussed this a few weeks ago.
Benny, who's the replacement for Daryl Braithwaite? That's a good question. We'll have to find that out.
Benny's about to make it up.
I want to say Slayer.
We'll get back to us, Benny. I need your tip. First of all, Courtney Walsh for the Cox Plate.
Look, I'm with the favourite. I think that the Japanese form will clearly stand up. It's stood up before in the past in Australia. And I think, although, I mean, I also want to see Kluger. I think Kluger would be considering it strongly, given ran second to Winx earlier in the year. So it's
excited Humidor, and he didn't even get a start.
That's a very good point.
Lise Grasseur, they tell me, is the best ever horse to come from Japan to race in this country. So that's a good enough push for mine. Who are you tipping, Timmy?
Well, I'm tipping the story. I think after the week, and I know you've spoken about this a lot, that horse racing needs a great story.
Yes.
And normally it delivers a great story, and normally it delivers, you know, a truckload of them. But I think if Kings Will Dream can get up after what that horse, what the horse's connections went through after last year's Cox Plate, where it was genuinely, it was like 48 hours, maybe as long as a week, where they weren't sure if the horse would even survive. If he could come back and win, you know, Huey Bowman's legend could grow even more. that would be some sort of story, yeah. wouldn't it?
It would
that horse racing needs right now.
Yep. And there's a story like a Blackheart Bart that was retired at 9 years of age, and he's come back, and he will compete after paying up a late entry fee of $200,000 to compete in this race. Mystic Journey, such a wonderful story. So there's some terrific stories, and even the Japanese story with the syndications, like that Murder Glaze horse that won the Caulfield Cup last week. There's 400 people in that horse through that syndication. They paid around $1,000 Australian to be in Murder Glace, and now they're Caulfield Cup champs. This is
that says we're sitting in 28 degree yes. temperature.
Feel like at the Australian Open covering here.
Walsh looks like a tennis player. He needs needs a towel off.
Feels like he's Rafa Nadal in the middle of the fifth set. Rafa got this is the Tuesday hacks. It's 11:55. It's 28.2 degrees at Moonee Valley. Gareth.
Can I just say I'm only here because of Julian De Stoop's on paternity leave. Yeah. I got to meet Lily on the weekend, guys. So all's going well there in the De Stoop household. So the first time Daddy's having an absolute ball.
There you go. Timmy Hodges is with us and Courtney Walsh. Let's talk about the tennis. First of all, the big news, Rafa Nadal got married.
He did get married. It'd been a long time coming. I think they've been together for more than a decade, yep. I believe. So I guess,
you know who that means is next, Gareth?
Who?
Gareth Hall.
I think you're next. Rafa, you're next, aren't you?
I've only been about a year or so according to Rafa, I've still got about 9 years to go.
Are you close?
Hey? No.
As with all,
I'll let you know. I'll probably announce it here on RSN Central. Well,
you married off little Joey Pig last week, and he was very sheepish.
He's not far away.
Didn't propose at all.
Yeah, Joey Pig Notaro, mind you, is our producer here on RSN Central and does balls and bumpers with Timmy Hodges and Jack Revolt and Scotty McLaughlin. So we thought he was going to propose the other day, but he didn't. But back to the tennis. Rafa's getting married, but Andy Murray, talking about Kingsville Dream and Blackheart Bard producing comebacks and a half, Andy Murray retired, and now he's back.
Well, Andy Murray was retired as opposed to actually retiring himself. He said at that press conference, very emotional in Melbourne at the start of the year, that he thought it was it. You know, he was considering all his options, but given the way he was feeling, the hip had been just causing him so much pain, just restricted him so badly in terms of his movement that he just didn't think it was possible unless there was some miracle cure. So, you know, after his match in Melbourne, the Australian Open organised a very emotional, I suppose, video on the big screen. Roger Federer, Nick Kyrgios, all manner of people were saying, farewell, Andy, thanks for a great career. You've been wonderful. Then one of the Bryan brothers who'd had similar issues, the legendary doubles players from America, put him in touch with a surgeon in the States. Shaved some bone off the hip, and it's proved all the difference. He went from hitting against a brick wall very gingerly a few months ago to beating Stan Wawrinka, another legend, another bloke on the comeback trail as well, in the final in Antwerp in a really high-class match on Sunday. Really an astonishing performance. Yeah. We've seen it. I guess it's like, you know, we heard about gallopers today, such as Humidor. They were saying it's, you know, a bit ring rusty early on, but just starting to show some signs in the last couple of runs. With Andy, you could see it coming. His movement was coming back.
Yep.
And in tennis, you need that. It can take you months to sort of get you right back to where you are if you've had a little step away. So, very good. Whether he can win a slam again, I certainly think he's very capable of making second weeks and pushing deep into second weeks. And given his class, you just wouldn't rule it out. If he's feeling good, because he was able to win slams when he wasn't feeling good, he might be able to get back there.
That would be a story, Timmy.
Yeah. Well, I think the best tennis story he had before was Nick Kyrgios is back in the Davis Cup team this morning.
Astonishing.
Can you believe... Did that quick catch you by surprise, Walshy, after the... I mean, it seemed that the relationship between Leighton Hewitt and Kyrgios was a bit toxic there.
It was certainly toxic because in January, after Nick had, I suppose, used social media to highlight that Leighton was attending matches involving some of the other Australians, but certainly not himself nor Thanasi Kokkinakis, who was looked over for a wild card. And then Bernie Tomic came out and dropped the bombshell about the, I suppose, there'd been misgivings, you know, behind closed doors. There'd been some whispers. And Leighton was very strong, very adamant in his press conference that Nick would not be selected for Australia based on the dedication or lack thereof that he was showing at that time and his behavioural standards. Just last month, Nick was issued with a suspended 16-week ban for repeated poor behaviour this year, primarily related to an event in Rome where he threw a chair onto the tennis court and got
As a forklift goes past us, down the valley. Yeah. What's it got on the back of it?
No chair, none of them.
We need a beer. Anyway, go on.
So, yeah, throws a chair under the tennis court in Rome, gets defaulted. Effectively, among many things in Cincinnati, spits towards an umpire. And then in New York comes out and says the ATP Tour is corrupt for fining me $167,000 for that. So that's only last month. So and he hasn't played since the Laver Cup, where he's been pulled out of events since. So I was surprised. I guess so in terms of that, he doesn't necessarily seem to have mended his ways in terms of behaviour. No. So that's one step. The other thing is, it's always said that he's better in team events.
Yeah.
Now I think for the most part that's true. That was very famous week in Darwin where he was probably not so well behaved, but generally behaves pretty well. You see him engaged in the Laver Cup. It's an interesting decision for me.
They must have had a chat behind closed doors, you would imagine, to pick him.
Had to have. But, yeah. But look, he could be the difference.
Does it show how desperate they are to win the thing?
Oh, well, they're always desperate to win the Davis Cup. But with him in the team, they can win the Davis Cup.
Whose side are you on? Are you on Leighton's side or are you on, say, Nick's side when all that happened a couple of months ago?
Oh, look, I think there was various issues. I can see.
Is Leighton the? I don't think anyone's brought this up. Is Leighton our best option for captain?
Oh, I think in Davis Cup he is. Yeah. I think he demands and dictates a high standard, absolutely. Now, whether that's, there's been some, I suppose, misgivings because communication was an issue, and certainly...
Favouritism?
Well, favouritism's a strong word, but the way Leighton did it, which is to work so hard and so, he was so focused on his craft, that's not going to work for everyone. And so whether it's a matter of, learning that some of the players, for example, Nick, won't perform as well when he's feeling pressured or feeling drained.
Is Nick running out of...
Mates?
Not mates. Just people in his corner. That it seems like the world of tennis wants him to be great. They need him to be great because they need somebody to be coming and replacing the Federers, Nadals, Djokovic's, Murray's, whenever it is time for them. But I think he's running out of supporters, in Australia.
He's probably the greatest non-Grand Slam winner to get people through the gates, really.
Well, you only have to look at a tournament.
It's a circus, you go and see.
The tournament that he won in DC, they sold out with Nick on the card.
Yeah.
They sold out. So he's a ticket seller. He's still the only person. You might beg differently with perhaps a Will Power or someone like that or a Ben Simmons, but I've still yet to see a Ben Simmons full wall mural in New York City next to Serena Williams, and I'm still yet to see Ben Simmons on his own carry an ESPN broadcast. They put him on Friday nights, that prime time Friday nights and Saturday nights at the US Open on Saturday night. They want him in the action. Yeah. So he's very big in that regard. But
whether so he's not running out of supporters to answer the question.
Not so much that, but I mean certainly behavioural. He's now on such a thin line in terms of thin edge. In terms of if he gets a code violation for abusing an umpire, which seems like it's almost like a weekly event, he's out for 16 weeks, and that's a significant hit.
I take that comment back regarding favourites. I mean that Leighton Hewitt looks after, he rewards the people that work like he did, like the Diminals and the Thompsons, and he probably gets frustrated with the way that Kyrgios prepares. Would that be right?
Look, I think that's probably a good way to put it, but we should also point out that the Diminals and the Millmans and the Thompsons have had great results this year as well.
Correct.
So, Diminor's won 3 ATP titles. Nick's won a couple of titles this year as well. He's done well. Thompson's up to a career-high ranking. Millmans bounced back inside the top 60 after, going out the gate a bit. So, I suppose it's an interesting one. One size does not fit all.
It's 12:04. This is the Tuesday Hacks with Gareth Hall, Timmy Hodges and Courtney Walsh. Before we let you go, Timmy, you're the most powerful man in the V8. You were very vocal to this time last week and as the week went on regarding and vocal towards, I should say, the V8 stewards and the supercar stewards for not making a decision earlier regarding whether McLaughlin kept his Bathurst 1000 crown. Eventually he did, but geez, his team paid a big penalty, really. It cost him a little bit.
Yeah, it was just the messiest week in supercars that I can remember, which is such a shame after one of the greatest Sundays the sport's ever had at Bathurst with a great race, a great winner, great TV figures, a great crowd there, to then slaughter the week like they did. And then the stewards, who actually brought their decision forward, which I was adamant they should have done last Tuesday, they heard it on the weekend rather than wait until this week with the Gold Coast 600. And they came down with a finding that has not pleased anyone in the sport, so they've alienated everyone now.
So you don't agree that Coulthard got penalised as much as he did? I think he
was relegated to last. They gave the team a massive points penalty. They found the team guilty of team orders.
Yes.
But then they didn't strip the race.
Well, it doesn't make sense. It's either one or the other, isn't it?
It's either one or the other. So they've really ticked a lot of people off. and I feel for Scott McLaughlin, who has won everything in supercars this year, who had his greatest moment at Mount Panorama. This has nothing to do with him. This was the sister car in the team that was caught up in the mess, and he was collateral damage. So I hate the fact that it's really clouded his victory and his greatest ever moment in supercars. And, you know, he has dominated the sport like we've never seen. We've never seen dominance like this. 25 races this year. He's now won 18 of them. You know, he could win the championship as soon as this weekend on the streets of Surfers Paradise.
It's like someone winning the Cox Plate today and winning the race, keeping the race, but they suspend them for 2 months because they think that they cause interference.
Exactly, and being able... and being stripped of their points and still being able to keep the trophy, which makes
prize money.
No sense.
Yeah.
It is. I know there's a great race here on Saturday. For those, if you're sitting on the couch this weekend, flick over and catch a bit of the Gold Coast 600. It's my favourite motorsport event of the weekend, of the year. It is supercars at their best when the only way around the Surfers Paradise streets is to rub up against concrete walls to get air over the curbs. It's a very good, cool place to go racing.
Love your work, boys. Hey, can someone hose Walshy down, please? Can we get a picture of Walshy? Get a picture before we, and so I can put that on social media so people can understand what I'm saying. He has, like, if he was a horse, you would not back him in the parade. Because he has split up a tree.
What about the courage?
Yes.
Heart as big as Farlap to be sitting here.
Thank you, Walsh. Just quickly, the Victorian cricketers had a bad weekend. They went down to WA. Ooh. Would you play Sean Marsh in a test?
I think a colleague of mine's made the point.
Yes.
Very.
No.
No.
Where does he sit with Kyrgios?
No.
No,
that's...
No.
See you later, Tim. Timmy Hodges and Courtney
Jules will be back next week.
How dare you? Time for a quick break and then.